Thanks, Miles, for introduction, and thanks, Roger, for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to Zoom all the way from China. And so today I'm going to share with you some of my recent research on emergent classicalities. I should say this is like my spare time research. It is not funded by any agency. They don't want to do that. And so I basically use my out-of-pocket money to sponsor this research. And so the topic is about why our universe is fundamentally quantum, but our everyday life is classical. Where does the sense of classicality emerge from a quantum many-body system? So talking about classicality in physics, the word classical basically is used in contrast to quantum. Classical physics refers to physics before quantum mechanics, such as classical mechanics or electromagnetism. And then classical physics is deterministic and it works pretty well for macroscopic objects in our in the world, in our everyday life. However, in the early 20th century, it was realized that classical physics does not quite apply to microscopic worlds, does not quite apply to like fundamental particles when things are very small. And then due to all these great physicists, a new branch of physics, quantum mechanics, was established. And it is intrinsically probabilistic. And it is actually more than probabilistic. It's more than a probability theory. It actually very, very exotic. It describes the square root of probability. So the square root is called probability amplitude. And because you take a square root and then there will be plus minus sign ambiguity. And it is because of this sign ambiguity that allows quantum mechanics to describe phenomena like quantum interference or quantum superposition or even entanglement. It gives rise to all the amazing phenomena in quantum mechanics, which was not able to be seen in classical physics. So there is this difference. And then one very famous example to illustrate this difference about quantum superposition is Schrodinger's cat. So this quantum idea of quantum superposition in a quantum mechanics as a state of a system can be in a superposition of two different kinds of distinct realities. This kind of idea is actually amplified when it comes to many-body systems, when the system has many qubits. The famous example is Schrodinger's cat, which is a thought experiment proposed by Schrodinger that a hypothetical cat was locked in a black box with a radioactive atom. So this represents an atom, and the atom can have two states, either it will decay or it will not decay. So we can basically model it as a single qubit, which is in a superposition state. At the beginning, the system is in a product state between this superposition atom state and a live cat. And under time evolution, two scenarios can happen. Either the atom doesn't decay and the cat will be alive very happily. And then all the atom decays and emits a radiation and then and trigger a chain reaction to kill the cat. So after the unitary time evolution, the system wave function basically end up with an entangled state. It entangles the qubit of this atom with the cat such that it becomes a live and a dead entangled state. So the cat state in quantum information can be modeled by the so-called GHZ state. You can start from eigenstate of the X operator, and under time evolution, it can evolve into a superposition of a multi-qubit state, where all these n qubits are either in the zero state or in the one state, and then superposition with each other. So we can use this all zero state to mimic a live cat, because if the cat is alive, the idea is all the cells in its body is alive, is in the so-called zero state. If the cat is dead, then every cell in its body is dead. It's in every qubit is like in the one state. So that's the intuition. And in fact, this entanglement can be prepared quite efficiently if you consider this C-naught gate starting from an atom with a cat and then going through this time evolution. So this quantum circuit is going to mimic the time evolution process, and you can prepare a cat state. So that means in principle, quantum mechanics doesn't forbid us to prepare a Schrodinger cat state. And nowadays, quantum devices, I think people can even do a few qubit cat states in reality, but we never see it in our like everyday life. So why is that? And there's a Copenhagen interpretation saying that if you observe the cat, it could cause the superposition state to collapse into one of the two classical realities, either the cat is alive or dead. So this is all due to the fact that we open the box and make an observation. But this kind of interpretation leads to many open questions, like what happens during the observation? Who qualifies as an observer? Should the observer be conscious or intelligent? So that's where sometimes intelligence also enter this conversation, and people think about whether consciousness or intelligent observer is required in this interpretation. A more modern understanding, however, does not explicitly involve intelligence. It's considering this quantum state collapse as described by two ingredients. One is the randomized measurement followed by classical data processing, which is very similar to nowadays classical shadow tomography. So there's two processes. The measurement process is the idea, I think, is like this. So because the reason that the nature doesn't want you to see this very highly entangled state is because it's very inevitable that the system, a quantum system, will interact with its environment. Suppose we prepare a cat state, which is a highly entangled many-body state, then when it interacts with the environment, for example, you can't avoid, for example, air molecule to interact with the cat because air molecule is surrounding, and then it can bounce off the body of the cat. And depending on whether the cat is alive or dead, the air molecule will bounce off the cat's body in different ways. So this kind of interaction is like environment is trying to measure the cat. And this interaction is also building up entanglement between the cat and its environment. So entanglement by definition basically means there is a quantum information sharing between the cat and its environment. But if you only look at the cat, then that basically means some information is leaking to the environment. So if you only look at the cat, you miss that information. So there is an entropy increase associated with that. And this entropy increase causes the pure cat state to evolve into a mixed ensemble of alive and dead. That's the standard understanding of decoherence. And this process is called quantum decoherence. And this process seems to be objective, and no intelligence is required to trigger this decoherence. It's just quantum system interacting with environment. However, decoherence, of course, provides a very good framework to understand emergence of classicality, but I think it may not be the final story. There's still another layer of complexity, I think. Because when you start from a pure state of the cat, and then you can say, okay, interact with the environment, trace out the environment, you get a mixed state. But then in terms of reality, when you look at the cat, somehow it still collapses. You still need to choose there's half of one half versus one half probability, choose one of the reality. And this choice, how does this belief, like when we open up the box, how do we believe that the cat is alive or the cat is dead? How is this belief forming in our mind, in an observer's mind? That kind of process is still a little bit mysterious to me, at least. So this talk is more or less try to understand this part. So how to collapse from the mixed state to one of the pure classical states. But if you look at the entropy of the system, as you go from this pure state to mixed state and back to pure state, the entropy goes from zero to one bit and then to zero bit. So the entropy increase in the first process is easy to understand because randomized measurement, like air molecule bouncing off the cat's body, is like a random measurement because air molecule doesn't have any intention. It just randomly measures the cat. But this extract information about the cat and then put it into the environment. But in order to identify what is the state of cat after the decoherence, I think another necessary process is to put the information from the environment back into the system. So there must be some approach to do this classical data processing. Because if you don't do this data processing, if you don't look at the environment, don't open up the box, then basically cats will just decohere and then this information will just miss in the environment and then it will remain in such a mixed state. And then you don't know which reality is chosen during this process. But if you want to identify a reality, I think an important ingredient is that you go to the environment and try to collect all the measurement outcomes. This air molecule bouncing off the cat's body, it constitutes some measurement outcomes. And then if you collect this measurement outcome and try to process that from these measurement outcomes, you can probably come up with a conclusion whether this cat is alive and dead or dead. So this is, I think, a process that may involve intelligence because you need to start from some random data and come up with a conclusion. So the idea is to test this kind of hypothesis using a combined system, which we invite an AI system, artificial intelligence, to process the randomized measurement data and see whether we can identify a classical reality in the latent space of this, for example, neural network. So the idea is to first prepare a quantum entangled state in the quantum world and do some local randomized measurements. And then we will collect a lot of measurement outcomes and measurement results. And then we will try to send these results to classical machines to see how the classical machine, what kind of knowledge it will learn from these randomized measurement outcomes. So I'm not going to solve the most fundamental problem of how this collapse happens. I think I will still just follow the standard quantum mechanical way of calculating this measurement outcome. So today's talk is more about what happens in the classical world, how to process this thinly random noise data and then come up with a conclusion about the classical reality. Okay, any questions? Okay. So let me set up the setting more precisely. So the central theme is about randomized measurement, and it is a very hot topic nowadays. Alban and many others has wrote a very nice review of a randomized toolbox, which I highly recommend. So the idea basically is that randomized measurement is nowadays a tool to estimate properties of an unknown quantum state by measuring random observables. And the philosophy is to measure first and then ask questions later. So previously, when we come up with physics experiment, we need to design what things to measure and design the experiment to measure that particular physical observable. But that is not the idea for randomized measurement. Randomized measurement, basically like air molecule measuring the cats, it has no purpose. So the measurement scheme I'm going to consider is like this. So I will first prepare an n-qubit GHZ state to mimic the Schrodinger's cat. And then I will try to perform random and local measurements. Of course, I don't have a quantum device, so I will just simulate that on a classical machine. So during the simulation, I will first draw a sequence of Pauli observables uniformly for every qubit, from qubit number one to qubit number n. For every qubit, I can draw an observable, the observable x, let's say xi, can either be x or y or z, which is the three Hermitian observables, independent observables on a single qubit. And then because all these single qubit observables, they commute with each other, so there's no problem that we can simultaneously measure all of them. So we independently measure each qubit by its corresponding observable. And after the measurement, of course, the cat state will collapse. And then it will collapse as a consequence, and we will also have measurement outcomes. I'm not trying to describe this detail, I will just assume quantum mechanics and I will calculate this outcome. And this outcome, because XYZ observable, they are all like a Pauli observable, all has eigenvalue plus minus one. So this outcome can only be a sequence of plus minus ones. And then I will throw away the state and prepare a new GHZ state, identical state, and repeat this experiment. And through this process, one can imagine that one can collect a lot of data. So the data structure basically is a pair of sequences. So it is a sequence of observables X, which belongs to a sequence of XYZ observables, and a sequence of measurement outcomes, this sequence of plus minus one. And the sequence will follow a joint distribution P of XY, which can be decomposed into a prior distribution for X, followed by a conditional distribution PY given X. So P of X basically is how we are going to measure, it's determined by our measurement scheme, how we are going to choose this observable sequence. So here I will just follow the randomized Pauli measurement protocol, and then I will choose every possible Pauli sequence with uniform probability. So this is a trivial probability. All the non-trivial probabilities hidden in this conditional distribution, that is the measurement outcome condition on the observable sequence. So this is can be given by a formula like this. This is the projection operator on every site, and then on every qubit, and then the psi stands for the GHZ state, stands for the cat state. So you evaluate that tells you what should be this probability. So this non-trivial conditional probability encodes all the quantum information about the cat state. And this is also the probability that we are going to model with the generative model. But let's say if I have collect all this data, and suppose I just have a large ensemble of data, in principle, I don't need any artificial intelligence. I don't need any generative model. I just can use this data. This data actually is also called the classical shadows because they correspond to measurement outcomes of a quantum state. If you imagine quantum state as a high dimensional object, every measurement is like projecting this quantum state to a specific measurement basis. Then it's like casting a shadow from a high dimensional space to a low dimensional space. So that's why people call it classical shadows. And then from which these classical data, basically, the quantum state can be recovered by the classical shadow tomography reconstruction formula, which is given by this formula. Okay, so now the task basically is we have a large amount of these XY sequence data. So here I'm showing examples of what kind of classical shadows we collect from the Schrodinger cat states. You will see like X, if it's a sequence like that, then Y correspond to the measurement outcome. These are some samples like that. So that's the idea. And then So if I have all this data, I can, of course, construct the quantum state. But suppose I don't have enough memory to store all this data. I wish to process the data on the fly when I keep doing this experiment repeatedly. So maybe I want to train a generative model to model this joint probability distribution. But since this P of X is quite trivial, so actually I only want to train a model to model this PY given X. If I can successfully train such a model and it converges nicely, then I can do some experiment and train the model. And later on, I don't need to do further experiment. I can just query the generative model with arbitrary observable sequence, and it will give me new observable observation outcomes. And I can just use this generative model as my data set for classical shadow tomography for state reconstruction purpose. So the idea was to test how well a generative model can learn this kind of conditional probability distribution of measurement outcome conditional on the observables. So the objective is to model this conditional distribution. But if you look at this problem, this task is very much like X is asking a question to the quantum system. And then the quantum system after measurement returns the answer, which is Y. So this very obviously maps to a chat completion task in natural language processing. So that's why we can train a transformer-based generative language model to perform the task. So after training, the model can replace quantum experiment to answer questions about the underlying quantum state. For example, we are particularly training the model on the cat state. So it will only answer questions about the underlying cat state. In other words, this language model can actually speak the quantum language. It can answer quantum problems, questions. So the architecture that we designed is basically a transformer. So we basically think of it as X is like an input sequence, Y is an output sequence, and we want to learn how to generate Y based on X. So transformer is very good in doing that. You can send X into the transformer encoder. It will encode X into a latent space as a sequence of vectors, basically. And then it will use this sequence of vectors and also this Y to compute what should be the conditional, what should be the log likelihood of Y given this latent, basically. And here I make a little twist of the transformer. Transformer basically encoder directly sends this latent vector into the decoder. But here I'm using a variational autoencoder kind of a structure here. So here the encoder is not directly predicting this Z, but it predicts the mean and the variance, element-wise mean and variance of this latent vector sequence, basically. And then I'm using a Gaussian distribution to model this PZ given X, given this mean and the variance or standard deviation. And I sample Z from this distribution. The reason I want to do that is because I wish that I have a way to adjust the information bottleneck between the encoder and the decoder. Because if I just encoding everything into the latent, I can't shrink the latent space dimension very easily. But with this construction, as we will see later, we can impose a KL divergence regularization in the latent space to regularize and to put a information bottleneck. So basically the way that I train this model is I take XY from my classical shadow data set collected from the cat state. And for every pair of the sequences, there is the loss function contains two terms. The first term is the negative log likelihood term, which is trying to push the model to reconstruct the correct Y given the X. And then the second term is a KL divergence, which is trying to regularize this PZ given X distribution towards the normal distribution. If this regularization is very strong, then this PZ given X will be kind of independent of X. In that sense that the encoder will fail to encode any information that was contained in the observable sequence and the model will become weak. So I want to explore what the model will learn given different levels of this hyperparameter beta, which controls the information bottleneck strength. And then basically, that's the experiment I'm going to do, and that's actually what I did. And then I trained it with cat state classical shadows with different betas, and I obtained different machines basically. So I trained these machines on separately, independently, on with different beta level and with different number of qubits. Remember that the cat state, the GHZ state. Originally, when I defined it, it's an n-qubit GHZ state. You can also change this number of qubits. Because the intuition is that maybe classicality emerges as the number of qubits becomes larger. So we also wish to vary the number of qubits to see. Okay, so after we train all these models, we wish to evaluate the model. What's its performance, right? So one way to evaluate a model, one metric is fidelity, which measures the closeness of the quantum states that the model reconstructs and the quantum state that we have. So if you basically draw X and Y from the classical shadow data, this is the formula you should use to reconstruct the cat state. And if this is drawing from the data and you are guaranteed to reconstruct the original GHZ state from the data, because this is just an identity. But now we can also try to draw X and Y sequence pairs from the model after training. And then the model will also follow the same formula, give you a reconstructed quantum state, which is called rho tilde, which might be different from rho. So the fidelity is trying to measure the difference between rho and rho tilde. And because rho basically is a pure state in this case, so it has a simpler formula like that. And then it is a number between 0 and 1, which fidelity approaches 1 means that the model reconstructed state is very close to the original cat state. So here is a picture of we trained 72 different models which correspond to every pixels here. Every pixel is trained independently and evaluated in this diagram. So the horizontal axis is this hyperparameter beta in the log scale, which parameterize the information bottleneck strengths. So if beta is very large, then the bottleneck is very stringent, then the model is very weak. And if beta is very small, then the model is stronger. That means it has a larger information processing capacity. And then the vertical axis is the number of qubits in the GHZ state. So this one is like a very microscopic GHZ, say one qubit. And then six is a more macroscopic GHZ state. So the color basically denotes the fidelity as I just described. So this fidelity, you can see it goes from zero to one. And then if the model is very strong and the qubit number is smaller, typically the model can learn the cat state very well and can reconstruct the cat state. And then if this is the model is very weak, then the fidelity drops to zero. But interestingly, as we increase the number of qubits, you can see there's a green region that is emerging in the phase diagram or in this kind of diagram. And this green region has fidelity one half. And then it's we are very curious what's that. And I can tell you that basically corresponds to the decohered cat state, the cat state density matrix without the off-diagonal matrix element. So basically means that given the same information bottleneck, if you keep increasing the number of qubits, then the model will at a certain point, the model will fail to learn all the quantum reality from the data. It can only reconstruct the classical state, the decohered state. Or you can say, if I fix the number of qubits and I keep increasing the information bottleneck strength, you can also see that the model will transition from the quantum to classical. So it seems that there is a quantum classical boundary here. And this red state basically correspond to so-called the thermal state, which where the reconstructed density matrix is more or less like an identity matrix. So that's I just saying. So in order to see that is indeed that is the case, so I'm choosing, I want to study that more carefully. So I'm going to pick three representative machines and then show you what's their behavior in order to convince you that they represent the quantum classical and so-called thermal state. So these three machines, I will name them as Atlas, Boreas, and Cygnus, stands for A, B, and C. And these names were suggested by ChatGPT that I asked ChatGPT to give me three names which does not correspond to human names. So, and goes like A, B, and C. So that's, it's a suggestion, I will just follow that. So Atlas basically is the strongest machine and Cygnus is the weakest one. And to understand the difference between these three machines or these three models, because they are trained as language models, so you can really chat with them. And then we can ask them to do the so-called one-shot cat classification. The task is basically given a one-shot observation of the cat, try to determine whether the cat is alive or dead. And then the prompt that you can engineer to do this task is try to say, okay, I can prompt the language model with Z, 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 meaning that I'm going to measure all the five qubits in the Z basis. And suppose the first four qubits is already, the measurement outcome is plus, try to fill this blank. This question mark is a blank for the language model. And language model as an autoregressive model, it can fill this blank. And then our expectation is that the language model will learn that there will be two classical realities when it sees that most of the cell in the cat's body is alive and knows that the cat should be alive, then the last cell is also alive. So it should complete this chat with a plus, or the other case, it should complete with a minus. So let's see whether it's the case. So that's the performance of these three machines, Atlas, Boreas, and Cygnus. So you can see that Atlas and Boreas can perfectly determine whether the cat is alive or dead. Because if it is this task, Z, 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 Z with plus, 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 and then the last one should be plus, right? And then Atlas and Boreas has 100% of probability to answer, to fill in this blank with plus. But Cygnus is a weaker machine, and then Cygnus basically doing almost guess. It's like almost half to half probability. So Cygnus is a model which cannot make a clear judgment of even the classical reality. So that's one thing. Another thing is that another very interesting task is so-called the out-of-distribution classification task. So remember, the previous task is actually an in-distribution chat completion, because this is something that during the training process, the machine has a chance to see, right? This is a legitimate kind of a measurement outcome. But what about this kind of prompt? We can prompt as a language model, you can ask it any questions. You can say X is like Z, 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 but Y is like minus, plus, plus, minus. This is a measurement outcome that will never appear if you really do the Pauli measurement on a GHZ state. But you can still ask the machine, like half of the cell is already dead, half of the cell is alive, what should be the last cell? Try to make a judgment whether the cat is alive and dead or dead. So this is the behavior of Atlas and Boreas. They basically I'm plotting vertical axis, the predicted Z5 polarization, and then versus the average Z1 to Z4 polarization. So these two points, these two corner points, correspond to the in-distribution data where Atlas and Boreas has a very good understanding and they can perform the task perfectly. All the intermediate points correspond to the out-of-distribution data, meaning that they are not appearing in the training data. So Atlas and Boreas has to infer, has to guess, has to make a reasonable interpolation. And you can see they indeed make a pretty reasonable interpretation. And one thing is that the Boreas seems to look at the world in a more binary manner, that it tried to classify the cats by the majority vote, almost like that. And Atlas is viewing the world in a more non-binary manner. It sees the cat alive and dead as a continuous spectrum, as a continual process. But Cygnus, as a very weak machine, couldn't do this task very well. So that is one thing. That is about judging whether the cat is alive or dead. Another thing is we know that there is another very important feature in the Schrodinger's cat state, that is the quantum coherence. And because the local Z measurements always destroy the quantum coherence of the cat state, so you should prompt it probably with other questions in order to probe the coherence. So in order to preserve the coherence, we can consider local X measurement. If we make all the first four qubits measurement in the X basis, we can actually preserve the coherence into the last qubit. So the last qubit basically will be prepared into a 0 plus 1 divided by square root 2, kind of a plus x state. So on that state, it's like the coherence hasn't been destroyed. Then if you now ask whether the Schrodinger cat is alive or dead, so it's like asking a question of Z and then try to answer. Then if it's plus, it's like alive, and minus is like that, then Atlas and Boreas can nicely answer this question with 50 to 50% probability. But if you try to ask another question on the last qubit with X, which is trying to say what is the sign of the coherence, then you can see that is the only point where you see the difference between Boreas and Atlas. Atlas can still say that 100% is plus, but Boreas will basically give you half to half, plus and minus, meaning that Boreas as a weaker machine than Atlas, although it can classify classical reality very nicely, but it cannot basically predict or infer the quantum coherence between the two classical states. So that is the I conclude all this in this table. So in terms of the questions? Okay. So in terms of the task of predicting the last Z from the first four Z, Atlas and Boreas do the task very nicely, has a basically 100% of accuracy, meaning that they can realize the classical reality, but only Atlas can do this task. This task is trying to predict the quantum coherence. That's what Atlas can do nicely. And then if you draw samples from these language models and try to reconstruct the quantum state, these are the density matrix. I plotted as these colors. And every pixel corresponds to a density matrix element because it's a 5-qubit state. So it's a 32 by 32 matrix. And this off-diagonal matrix element corresponds to the quantum coherence of the cat state. And Borias basically missed that. And then Cygnus basically almost learned a thermal density matrix. Thermal in the sense is like identity, close to identity matrix. Okay. So that is the comparison between these three models. So given this kind of understanding, we can interpret this model as quantum, classical, and thermal. And then this boundary basically corresponds to the quantum classical boundary. So the message basically is that I think even if we provide an intelligent agent with the full measurement data, you can see I'm providing it with the classical shadow data. And then I'm not hiding any qubit from the intelligent agent, from the AI system, right? From this model, every qubit's measurement outcome is provided. So this is actually tomographically complete. So in principle, we know that the strongest model, if you just deal with the data, the strongest model should be able to reconstruct the full quantum reality. But still, we cannot reconstruct the full quantum reality. I think the problem is because there is some limitation in the in these generative models information bottleneck. So the classical reality emerges, if you look at this picture, either by increasing the system size or by increasing the bottleneck strength. So in terms of the interpretation, that means our world appears classical to us, we as intelligent agents, because the world involves too many qubits for us to understand, or because we do not have enough classical data processing ability to understand, capability to understand all the classical data that has been dispersed in our environment. Although these classical data may already convey the full ideas of the quantum state of our underlying universe, but we just don't have the bandwidth to process them. So I think that's what I wish to conclude. And finally, I want to use one slide to show you what happened in the latent space. Because as a language model, it first maps the sequence, observable sequence into a latent space, and then map it back to the measurement outcome. So it's very interesting to understand the latent space structure. So here, basically, if you we can start from a sequence of XYZ sequence that's observable, and then the transformer encoder will take it to the latent space as a high dimensional and then sequence of vectors, basically. So this anyway is a very high dimensional data. So I'm using a Tesney visualization. Basically, Tesney is a way of the doing dimension reduction. And then you can reduce it to a two-dimensional space and try to visualize what's happening in the latent space. Where does the encoder encode every sequence into? So you can see Atlas basically has a very nice encoding. I show some examples also here. And then it basically try to encode different sequence at different places, and it forms 37 clusters. So it conveys the most abundant message. And then Borias, you can see there's a very important feature. That is, if you look at Borias, it still encodes, for example, the all Z sequence, or maybe Z, the 4Z is here, or the 2Z is here. So when Z observable appear at different places, Borias is very sensitive to that. Atlas is also very sensitive to that, because the classical information is basically the classical correlation between Z has a, the Z observable has a perfect correlation between its measurement outcome. So in order to predict the measurement outcome, the decoder needs to know where the Z observable is. Because if it knows the Z observable is here and here, it will try to put, if this one is plus, then this one should be also plus. So the decoder needs to know this position of Z observable in order to make this perfect correlation of these measurement outcomes. So that's why that motivates these machines to encode a different position of the Z observable differently in the latent space. But what about this X and Y observable? You can see Borias basically encodes all the sequence of purely X and Y observables onto the same into the same cluster. So this cluster contains all these kind of XXYXY, something like that. All of them is there. But differently, Atlas basically encode them into several different clusters. So it can convey this information to decoder, because this information is also important, because we know that the quantum coherence is actually encoded in the higher order correlation between the X observables. For example, all the X product together, that observable should be plus one on the cat state. That's a reflection of the coherence. And if you have two Ys, then this XXXYY, these string, if you product them together, the measurement outcome should be minus one. So the measurement outcome should be plus one if there is an even number of Ys in this sequence, and minus one if there's odd number, if there's a mod four equals zero number of Ys in this sequence, and then if it's mod four equals two number of Ys, then that's minus one. If it is an odd number of Ys, it's the product is basically zero. So the decoders needs to know how many number of Ys are there in the sequence in order to make a correct inference of how it should arrange this measurement outcome to capture the quantum coherence. So that's why this very crucial difference between the encoding makes the two different machine behaves very differently in terms of predicting quantum coherence. What about Cygnus? Cygnus is a very weak machine. It basically do some very random stuff. It neither encodes this position of Z nor encodes the number of Y observables. It basically forms nine clusters. And interestingly, these nine clusters are labeled by the first and the last observable. I don't know why, but it doesn't seem to be a very efficient piece of information for decoding, but that's the behavior I observe. So as a summary, I try to say that we use a transformer-based language model to process the randomized measurement data collects from the Schrodinger cat quantum state. And it seems that the classical reality emerges in this language model due to the information bottleneck. And then the model after training can actually classify whether the cat is alive and dead. It's unsupervised, but you can prompt it and then let it answer these questions. And then another thing I wish to say is maybe it implies a fundamental limitation in our ability to understand the quantum nature of our universe because our limited ability to process classical information. Even we are presented with the full data, maybe we cannot realize the full quantum nature behind this data. And then it also presents a challenge for machine learning tomography. So machine learning state tomography was also a very hot topic. But it seems that if you try to model this measurement outcome using this kind of approach, then sometimes it can be very difficult to infer long-range quantum coherence or quantum entanglement in these classical data using classical probability models, which a lot of machine learning tomography algorithm is based on. So we need to maybe think about how to solve that problem and then come up with nicer schemes. And then finally, I want to say this is a new venue for using unlabeled classical shadow data to train generative models for representation learning of quantum operators. That is my last slide where I show you can see all these observables gets encoded in the latent space. So why is that significant? Because I think if our final goal is to realize an AI quantum physicist, if you think about what AI has achieved nowadays, it has achieved huge success in image processing and language processing compared to many other domains. So the reason is that these AI models learns the representations behind image and language. So if we want to make a better use or greater use of AI in quantum physics, I think maybe one important step is to come up with nice ways to train the model to do a representation learning of quantum objects like quantum observables, quantum operators, or maybe quantum states. So with that, thank you for your attention.
Okay, thanks for a really nice talk. I found that very fascinating. We definitely have some questions.
Yuzhan, thank you for a nice talk.
Yeah.
I got lost in many of the things. But I want to know about the information bottleneck. Is it possible to quantify it, for example? Suppose you take a Schrodinger cat state, we talk about information bottleneck. Suppose you take a Werner state, all spin up, one spin down, and so on. So will the bottleneck be not there? How do you quantify it, just to get a feeling for it?
Yeah, I think the bottleneck here in this experiment, in this study, is more like the bottleneck in the AI system, not immediately defined as the bottleneck for the quantum state. But if you want to talk about quantum state, there's a similar idea, which is called the Markov blanket. So you can try to do this kind of calculation. Start from a Schrodinger cat state, which is a GHZ state. Compute the mutual information between the first qubit and the second qubit. We know that's one bit. And then what about mutual information between first qubit and second and third, right? One and two, three. One and two, three, four. One and two, three, four, five. You can keep computing the mutual information between the first qubit with the remaining qubit, while the remaining qubit, you take a larger, larger system size. And then you can try to plot this mutual information as a size, as a function of the size of the remaining qubit. You will see that this mutual information goes from zero when the size is empty set to one qubit, to one bit, and then it will remain at one bit for a long time until your remaining qubit set covers all the remaining qubit. It will suddenly jump to two bit. So this means that there is some information some information about the first qubits that is shared among the system that can only be inferred when you observe all the qubits. So that's I think that gives us a sense of what is a bottleneck, meaning that if you don't have enough information processing power, if you can only process some partial information, you won't be able to realize the full quantum mutual information, which is two bit. That is hidden in the cat state. Yeah.
Thanks. So I have two questions. The first one is about the choice of the GHZ state. So GHZ is essentially a rank two matrix product state. So it's the least entangled state that you can imagine. You know, less entanglement, and then you are just a classical state. And so, do you have any idea? I mean, I expect that if you do the same thing for more complex states, maybe it will fail sooner. Did you try this a bit or?
Yeah. We tried something, but I didn't present. So we tried two things. So first of all, you can start from GHZ state and do a local basis scrambling, meaning that you apply random unitary on every qubit and then ask whether the machine can still realize the classical reality, because now the reality is not all zero or all one. The basis, local basis has been scrambled. And it turns out that the machine can still realize the classical reality, meaning that
still has the same level of entanglement, right?
Yeah. That's just task one. And then there's a task two, doing global scrambling, right? Then that will create more entanglement. And we see, and what we found is that under global scrambling, the machine actually lose the ability to realize the classical reality. Yeah. Eventually, if you scramble too much, it will lose this understanding. Yeah, there will be no classical quantum interface. Yeah.
My second question is a bit more philosophical with respect to what you had at the end of your introduction. So I find the things about the collapse very interesting. You know, when you go from something with entropy to zero entropy. An experimentalist, when they do a reset of the qubit, is exactly when they will actually disentangle the qubit from the rest, right? But when you do that, you do it just once. It's not like you are repeating the experiment. So I was wondering if you could comment about what you really learn with what you have done on this aspect. I have the feeling that it's a bit separate somehow.
Oh, yeah. I should say this is not simply a reset, right? When you do reset, it's like you already know you want to reset to, for example, this state, and then you cool down your system or you re-prepare the qubit. But here, it's this collapse is more like my picture is like air molecule measuring the cat, and then there is some measurement outcome already in the environment. And at this point, maybe the reality of the cat has already been determined. It's just we don't know. If you don't look at it, and if you don't care about it, then the best description of the state is such a mixed state. But if you really take out all those measurement outcome by the air molecule, that outcome will tell you whether the cat is alive or dead. It's like you can see these are the typical classical shadows. So these classical shadows were supposed to mimic after air molecule bouncing off the body of the cat, what is the information left in the environment. So if, for example, if you look at this one, sometimes the air molecule choose to measure in the Z basis, and you already see 3-1. So by looking at this data, you should already like be able to justify that the cat is dead due to this -1. And this is alive, maybe due to this plus. So I think the fate of the cat has already been determined. And it's just the information hidden in the environmental noise. If you look at all these measurement outcomes, they really look like noise if you don't look at it carefully. And then the point is whether AI can come in and then try to learn from this data and come up with an idea how to process this noise to extract useful information from the noise. For example, determine whether the cat is alive or dead. And then it will use this noise to do later, like one-shot cat classification. After gets trained, it has the experience to classify cats, and then it can classify it later.
Okay, thanks. I think we have time for just like one more question.
Hi, John. Very interesting talks. I was interested in this phase diagram, sort of phase diagram slides.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Maybe the last slide is better, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a little bit interesting that so for more qubits, it's like my intuition is the tomography task is harder and harder, but it seems mm-hmm. how the classical region seems to expand, but the thermal region shrinks down. So what's the intuition there? Why the thermal?
Here there's also, I didn't talk too much about this one, but there's also a point here. That is classical reality becomes more prominent on this phase, on this side as well, because when you have more qubits, this perfect correlation between Z observable is more prominent, right? The only difference between classical and thermal is thermal, it didn't even learn that Z observable has a perfect correlation in terms of its measurement outcome. But the fact that the Z observable measurement outcome is more prominent if you have more qubits, because then you will have chance to see a lot of Zs and they are all plus, then that's an obvious thing. Then the generative model will pick it up quicker, I think. It is all about the variance of your training data. If you have this Z observable, many Z correlate together, it will reduce the variance and then it will train the latent representation better, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did we have one last like pressing question? Okay, I could have many questions too, but I think we'd better head to the break. So thanks for a really interesting talk. I think it's pretty profound, so thank you.
Thank you, thanks, Miles. Yeah, thanks everyone, see you.